temperature in the air for that. Down in the Hellas Basin, yes, but we didn't expect it here. Wish we could have taken samples of the stuff. Maybe it's ice crystals. But it doesn't look like an ice fog. How can you tell, though? The rules are different here. At least, the conditions are. Down toward the bottom of the canyon, there must be a completely different ecosystem from what we see up on the surface. Maybe the air's denser down there. Wetter. Warmer. Maybe there's life down there, hiding out in warm little niches, the way our ancestors used to live in caves. We should have set up base camp here, not out on that dumb plain. Then we could have spent our time exploring the canyon. This old rut in the ground has more to tell us than any place else on Mars. Dangling in the harness, suspended a few meters from the lip of the canyon and many kilometers from its mist-shrouded bottom, Jamie thrilled that the cliffs here were completely different from those at the Noctis Labyrinthos Badlands. There, the cliff walls were a uniform slab of iron-red stone. Here, the cliffs were layered, tier upon tier, as weathered and seamed as the mesas back home, rich pages of a petrified book that told the entire history of this world to those with the skill and patience to read it. The topmost layer of the cliff, just under the caprock, had been almost soft. The rock there, crumbly, easily broken loose. On Earth, it would have been weathered away by wind and rain in a geological twinkling. But here, on dry, calm, gentle Mars, it could remain for eons, undisturbed except for the slow erosion from the sun's warmth and the night's cold that eventually cracked it. Even so, there was no water in this layer, Jamie was willing to bet, not even permafrost. If there had been, the water's expansion and contraction during the day-night cycle would easily have crumbled such friable stone. The next tier was much tougher rock, its color a deeper red. More iron, Jamie guessed. Shergotite, like a meteor I found in Antarctica. Jamie whacked away with his handpick until he had several loose bits of the rock in his free hand. Chips and flakes fell clattering down, down beyond sight and hearing toward the canyon bottom so far below. As he slipped the rock samples into a collecting bag, Jamie realized he was soaked with sweat from the exertion. The suit's fans were buzzing, sounding angry at him for pushing them so hard. He pulled in a deep breath of canned air as he carefully tucked the pick into its loop on his belt and then pulled out the ballpoint pen, guaranteed to work even in zero gravity, and labeled the sample bag precisely. Date, time, exact distance from the rim. He got his depth, measured from the canyon's edge, by having Vosnesensky read off the tick marks on the winch's tether.
Not much daylight remaining.
Vosnesensky's voice sounded as remote and unemotional as a computer. Jamie glanced up, then leaned a booted foot against the rock wall to turn himself around in the harness. His leg flared into a million pinpricks. Hanging in the harness, both legs had gone asleep. Jamie muttered and cursed to himself as he flailed his legs and wiggled his toes to get some circulation going again. He felt as if a whole colony of ants were gnawing at his legs.
What is it?
Vosnesensky's voice was suddenly urgent.
Are you all right? My goddamn legs are asleep,
Jamie answered.
I will pull you up. No, it'll be okay in a minute or so. I want to get down to that third tier where the yellow stuff is. Time is getting short. Isn't it always?
Jamie looked out across the vast chasm, saw the shadows creeping toward him.
We've got another hour, at least. 1 hour,
said Vosnesensky with implacable finality.
Yeah, okay.
Jamie pushed the sample bag into the pouch strapped to his right thigh, next to his fetish, then started to reach up to the keypad on his chest that controlled the winch, and froze. His eyes caught a dark rift in the cliff wall a kilometer or more off to his left, a horizontal cleft with a flat floor and a slightly bulging overhang of rock above it, like the cleft at Mesa Verde where the ancient ones had built their village of dried mud bricks. And there were buildings in the cleft. Jamie felt the breath rush out of him, felt his insides go hollow, drop away as if he had been suddenly pushed off the edge of the tallest mountain in the universe. It can't be buildings, a part of his mind insisted. Yet as he stared, he could make out square shapes, walls, towers. There was no haze to obscure his vision. The air was as clear as a polished mirror at this level. Fumbling at his belt, without taking his eyes from the vision, Jamie found the video camera clipped there and yanked it free. He banged it against his visor, his head jolting back in surprise, then held it steady and adjusted its telescopic lens. His hands were shaking so badly, all he could see at first was a blurry, jumbled image. Fiercely, snarling inwardly, Jamie forced himself to a desperate calm, like a frightened man who knows he must aim his gun accurately or be killed. The dark cleft in the rocks steadied and pulled itself into sharp focus. Deep inside it, well into the shadows of the overhang, Jamie saw the flat surfaces and crenellated outline of whitish rocks. He was icy cold now. They're rocks, he told himself, not buildings, just a formation of rocks that looked roughly like walls and towers made by intelligent creatures. And yet, Jamie cranked the lens to its fullest magnification, then squeezed the camera's trigger until its tiny beeping told him the cassette had been used up. Only then did he take the vidcam from his eyes.
I'm coming up,
he said, shouting even though the microphone built into his helmet was bare centimeters from his lips. Vosnesensky sounded surprised.
Is something wrong? No, Mikhail, nothing's wrong. Something's right. What? What did you say?
It took more than 15 minutes for the winch to lift him back to the rim of the canyon. Jamie had not realized he had traversed so far down. He spent the time trying to see more of the cleft, trying to convince himself not to let his imagination run loose, trying to stay calm and not babble once he got up there with the Russian again. From the rim, he could not see the cleft. As he shrugged himself out of the harness, he said hurriedly to Vosnesensky,
Get into the rig, Mikhail. Quick. There's something down there you've got to see. Me? What? No time for discussion,
Jamie urged as he slipped the harness over the Russian's fire-red backpack and started buckling it across his chest. Puzzled, reluctant, Vosnesensky pulled the thigh straps tight and clicked them to the locking mechanism on his chest while Jamie reloaded the camera.
What is it?
He asked.
What have you found? A mirage, I think,
Jamie said.
But maybe.
Swiftly, he described the cleft and the shapes inside it. Vosnesensky said nothing as he backed himself to the lip of the rim rock and stepped off.
Wait!
Jamie yelled. He shoved the camera into Vosnesensky's gloved hands and fastened its tether to his equipment belt.
Use it as a telescope, but shoot the whole damn cassette. Keep shooting until it's all used up. Where do I look?
Vosnesensky asked as he descended. To Jamie, he looked like an old-fashioned deep-sea diver lowering himself into the abyss. Jamie kept rattling off instructions as the winch motor hummed thinly and Vosnesensky dropped lower.
I see it!
For the first time since he had met the Russian, Vosnesensky sounded excited.
Yes, interesting formations of rock inside.
His voice trailed off.
What do you think?
Jamie asked. No answer for many minutes. Then,
it can't be a city. It looks like rock formations. Yeah.
Jamie paced nervously back and forth along the canyon rim. Down below, the Russian was silent. Finally,
the tape is finished. I am coming up. Is it real?
Jamie asked as the winch labored, whining.
Real, yes. But not artificial. It could not be. Never mind what it could or couldn't be. What is it? Unusual formations of rock, but natural, not man-made. Martian-made. Not that, either.
Jamie knew he should agree. It couldn't be artificial. It couldn't be a village created by intelligent Martians. It couldn't be the ancestors of his ancestors, the forerunner of Mesa Verde and the other cliff dwellings of the Anasazi. He knew it could not be. But by the time Vosnesensky was standing beside him once more and pulling free of the harness, Jamie was babbling.
We've got to get the rover to that spot on the rim, right on top of it, so we can lower down and look in there for ourselves. We're too far away to make certain from this distance, and if there's any chance, any slightest chance at all, that we've found the remains of intelligent life... Holy Christ, Mikhail! It's the biggest discovery in the history of the world!
Vosnesensky remained strangely silent, like a stolid schoolmaster who is accustomed to sudden enthusiasms from his young students. Jamie kept on chattering, and the Russian remained silent as they took the winch apart, stowed it in the rover's equipment module, and then clumped into the airlock. Once inside the living section, they took their helmets off. Jamie could see that Vosnesensky looked solemn, almost pained. His heavy jaw was covered with several days' stubble, making his face seem